This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Genesis. Today, Pastor Sandy will be teaching through the book of Genesis, chapters 46 through 50.
In 2004, a tsunami crashed into Indonesia. It separated families and created thousands of lost children. One of the missing was a little girl of a truck driver named Mustafa Kamal. For 4 weeks, Mustafa combed the countryside in search of his 5-year-old daughter. Finally, his persistence was rewarded. He found his daughter, Rina, at a Save the Children refugee camp. A BBC article reported the emotional moment that occurred at their reunion. The father screamed when he saw her and cried as he fell to his knees to hug his daughter. "By the grace of God, I knew you were alive. I knew it." Kamal screamed as they embraced. Rina grabbed her father and began to sob. Well, Genesis chapter 46 recounts another emotional reunion between father and child. Joseph and his father, Jacob, had been victims of a tsunami of circumstance. Their close relationship was torn apart by jealous brothers and by the slave trade of Egypt. But after 20 years of separation, a reunion is about to take place. Hey, let me recap the story for you. A famine drives Joseph's brothers to Egypt searching for food. Joseph recognizes them immediately, but they don't recognize him. It's only after he's sure they won't do to his brother Benjamin what they did to him that he reveals to them his identity. Joseph tells his brothers to fetch their dad and bring him to Egypt. And that's where we pick up the story in chapter 46 of Genesis. So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father, Isaac. Now, Beersheba is the southernmost point of the land of Israel, right before you cross the hot sands of the Sinai Peninsula. And it was in those hot sands that Jacob got cold feet. You remember when Abraham faced an earlier famine, he fled to Egypt, and it was a mistake. He should have trusted God and stayed in the land that God had given him. I'm sure Jacob is wondering if he should do the same. But that's when God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." And he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. And Joseph will put his hand on your eyes." The closing of the eyelids was the last act of kindness done for a dying man. And it was an honor usually reserved for the man's closest relative. It's interesting that for Abraham, his trip to Egypt was a lack of faith. For Jacob, it was a show of faith. God assures him that his journey will be a round trip. Hey, what was wrong for Abraham was right for Jacob. The difference was God's will and God's timing and the man's motivation. Abraham was fearful. Jacob was faithful. Notice verse 5. "Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones, and their wives in the carts which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. So they took their livestock and their goods which they had acquired in the land of Canaan. They went to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him, his sons and his sons' sons, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt." In other words, he moved his whole household. Now these were the names of the children of Israel, Jacob and his sons who went to Egypt. Here he gives the trip's manifest, the passenger log. He lists his 12 sons, his daughter Dinah, 52 grandkids, and 4 great-grandsons. Dan actually had the fewest kids, only one son. Benjamin had the most, 10 sons. Simeon had a pagan wife, typical of the hard-hearted fellow that he was. And one of Issachar's sons is named Job. It's possible this is the namesake of the book of Job. He would have been a young man when he migrated to Egypt and left to settle in Uz. It's possible Moses knew him personally and penned his story. Notice verse 26 tells us, "All the persons who went with Jacob to Egypt, who came from his body besides Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2 persons, that being Manasseh and Ephraim. So all the persons of the house of Jacob who went to Egypt were 70. Joseph and his 2 sons were already in Egypt, add those three and Jacob himself, and you get to the number 70. Then he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out before him the way to Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen. The grand reunion takes place in verse 29. So Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel. And he presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. Notice they cried for a good while. They had a good long cry together. They shed some happy tears. And Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face, because you are still alive." Remember, as we've pointed out, Joseph is in many ways a type of Jesus. Here, Jacob treats him as if he was dead and is now alive. Verse 31. Then Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh and say to him, 'My brothers and those of my father's house who are in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for their occupation has been to feed livestock. And they have brought their flocks, their herds, and all that they have. So it shall be when Pharaoh calls you and says, "What is your occupation?" that you shall say, "Your servant's occupation has been with livestock from our youth, even till now, both we and also our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians." Now here's a quizzical note. Joseph instructs his family to tell the Pharaoh they're shepherds. And then he adds, "For every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians." Many historians believe that at the time, Egypt was under the control of foreigners. The Hyksos dynasty, or shepherd kings. Native Egyptians hated shepherds, but the royal family would be sympathetic. And this was part of God's purpose for sending his people to Egypt, to keep them from marrying unbelievers. The Egyptians wouldn't dare marry folks that they hated. Chapter 47. Then Joseph went and told Pharaoh and said, "My father and my brothers, their flocks and their herds and all that they possess have come from the land of Canaan. And indeed, they are in the land of Goshen." And he took five men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh said to his brothers, "What is your occupation?" And they said to Pharaoh, "Your servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers." And they said to Pharaoh, "We have come to dwell in the land because your servants have no pasture for their flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now therefore, please let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen." Then Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, saying, "Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Have your father and brothers dwell in the best of the land. Let them dwell in the land of Goshen. And if you know any competent men among them, then make them chief herdsmen over my livestock." Hey, Pharaoh's no dummy. He'll be a mummy one day, but he's no dummy. He found a gem in Joseph, and he's thinking that there may be more like him in his family. Notice verse 7. Then Joseph brought in his father Jacob and set him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. That's interesting. Hebrews 7 tells us that the blessor is greater than the blessee. Here, Jacob, the man of God, assumes authority over the ruler of Egypt. It proves that it's a greater honor to be a child of God than even an earthly king. Well, Pharaoh said to Jacob, "How old are you?" And Jacob said to Pharaoh, "The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage." Abraham lived to be 175. Isaac died at 180. Jacob will live 17 more years in Egypt and dies a baby, the baby of the lot, at 147. But notice how Jacob refers to his life on the earth. It's a pilgrimage. Life is not a port of call. It's a voyage. It's not a destination. It's a journey. This world is not our home. We're all just passing through. Our permanent residence is in eternity. Verse 10, so Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from before Pharaoh. Joseph situated his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. Then Joseph provided his father, his brothers, and all the father's household with bread, according to the number in their families. Now there was no bread in all of the land, for the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the grain which they bought, and Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. So when the money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, "Give us bread, for why should we die in your presence?" For the money had failed. The famine was so severe, the entire economy had collapsed. Inflation had devalued the money. Verse 16 says, "Then Joseph said, 'Give your livestock, and I will give you bread for your livestock if the money is gone.' And so they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for the horses, the flocks, the cattle of the herds, and for the donkeys. Thus he fed them with bread in exchange for all their livestock that year." Obviously, Joseph enhanced Pharaoh's supremacy and power. After the famine, every Egyptian was a crown tenant of the Pharaoh. When that year had ended, they came to him the next year and said to him, "We will not hide from my lord that our money is gone. My lord also has our herds of livestock. There's nothing left in the sight of my lord but our bodies and our lands. Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread, and we and our land will be the servants of Pharaoh. Give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land may not be desolate." And then Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. For every man of the Egyptians sold his field because the famine was severe upon them. And so the land became Pharaoh's. And as for the people, he moved them into the cities from one end of the borders of Egypt to the other. Only the land of the priests he did not buy, for the priests had rations allotted to them by Pharaoh, and they ate their rations which Pharaoh gave them. Therefore, they did not sell their lands. I'm sure Joseph hoped to gain control of the pagan priests. Over time, he could put them out of business, but they received special treatment from the Pharaoh. Verse 23, "Then Joseph said to the people, 'Indeed, I have bought you and your land this day for Pharaoh. Look, here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land, and it shall come to pass in the harvest that you shall give one-fifth to Pharaoh. Four-fifths shall be your own as seed for the field and for your food and for those of your household and as food for your little ones.' So they said, 'You have saved our lives. Let us find favor in the sight of my lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants.' And Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt to this day that Pharaoh should have one-fifth, except for the land of the priests only, which did not become Pharaoh's." A 20% tax was levied on the Egyptians. And so Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions there and grew and multiplied exceedingly. If the 70 Hebrews who entered Egypt grew at just 6% a year, after 430 years, the family would number several million people. And that is exactly what we find at the time of the Exodus. This is the first time the family's called Israel. In Egypt, a nation was born. Verse 28, "And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. When the time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, 'Now, if I have found favor in your sight, please put your hand under my thigh.'" Now, this was a custom for taking a vow. Circumcision was the sign of God's covenant with the family of Israel. To place your hand under a man's thigh near his circumcised part was the equivalent of placing your hand on a Bible and taking an oath. You were invoking God to hold you accountable for the promise you made. It was a way to prove your sincerity. Jacob tells Joseph, "Now, if I have found favor in your sight, please put your hand under my thigh and deal kindly and truly with me. Please do not bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers. You shall carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burial place." He wanted his body taken back to the promised land. And Joseph said, "I will do as you have said." Then he said, "Swear to me." And he swore to him. So Israel bowed himself on the head of the bed. Chapter 48. Now it came to pass after these things that Joseph was told, indeed, your father is sick. And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And Jacob was told, look, your son Joseph is coming to you. And Israel strengthened himself and sat on the bed. Then Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz, or Bethel, in the land of Canaan, and blessed me, and said to me, behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you. I will make you a multitude of people and give this land to your descendants after you as an everlasting possession. Here he's recalling the Abrahamic covenant. You remember the three parts of that covenant? God had promised to Abraham, to Isaac, and now to Jacob, three elements, the sod, the seed, and the salvation. The sod being the land, the seed, that a nation would come from his loins, and that through that nation the world would be saved, the salvation. The covenant was first made to Abraham, then to Isaac, and finally to Jacob and his 12 sons. And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. Your offspring, whom you beget after them, shall be yours, and you will be called by the name of their brothers in their inheritance. And this is a really big deal. Jacob officially adopts Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, essentially giving his family 13 tribes. Joseph is replaced by his two sons. It's fascinating that this becomes a pattern over the years, that whenever the Bible lists the tribes of Israel, there's always 12. There's never 13. But somehow the tribes are arranged so that the number's 12. The 13 tribes get listed as 12 for different reasons, sort of like a shell game. There are 13 tribes, but the list of tribes is always 12. We're told, but as for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died beside me in the land of Canaan on the way, when there was but a little distance to go to Ephrath, and I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, or that is Bethlehem. Verse 8, then Israel saw Joseph's sons and said, who are these? And Joseph said to his father, they are my sons, whom God has given me in this place. And he said, please bring them to me, and I will bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so that he could not see. Then Joseph brought them near him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said to Joseph, I had not thought to see your face, but in fact, God has also shown me your offspring. So Joseph brought them from beside his knees, and he bowed down with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near him. Joseph knows that his father is blind as a bat at this point. And so he lines up his sons, the older son Manasseh in front of Jacob's right hand and the younger son Ephraim in front of his left hand. Joseph is expecting his father to follow custom and give the birthright, the preeminence in the family, to the older son over the younger son. He doesn't realize that this family doesn't always follow custom. Verse 14. Then Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, guiding his hands knowingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless these lads. Let my name be upon them in the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. Now when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. So he took hold of his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, not so, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. But his father refused. And he said, I know, my son, I know. But also, he also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations. So he blessed them that day, saying, by you Israel will be blessed, saying, my God, make you as Ephraim, and as Manasseh. When he names Joseph's two sons here, he places Ephraim first, and thus he set Ephraim before Manasseh. Now understand, Israel's actions here were not a small matter in the eyes of God. What he does actually earns him a place in God's hall of faith. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 21 summarizes Genesis 48. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshiped, leaning on the top of his staff. Jacob crossed his hands to bless the boys. He blessed the younger son over the older. And in doing so, the writer of Hebrews said he worshiped God. I'm sure in his mind he was recalling God's grace toward him. Jacob was appreciative. He too was the younger son, yet he was blessed above his older brother Esau. You know, one of the peculiarities of all three Hebrew patriarchs is that the custom of the firstborn was violated in their families. Abraham honored Isaac, not Ishmael. Isaac blessed Jacob over Esau, and now Jacob blessed Ephraim over Manasseh. Hey, it's God's way of saying that his favor is not awarded according to natural advantage or man's endowment or through any earthly custom and tradition. God's favor is always awarded by grace through faith. Hey, God's blessing doesn't go to the folks we might expect. If you're the run of the litter, if you feel unwanted and looked over and unqualified, then take heart. God crosses his hands at the cross of Jesus, and through his sacrifice, he bestows the greatest blessings on the least deserving. Well, verse 21 tells us, "Then Israel said to Joseph, 'Behold, I am dying, but God will be with you and bring you back to the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to you one portion above your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorite with my sword and my bow.'" In essence, Israel's blessing on his grandsons, Ephraim and Manasseh, doubles Joseph's share of the family honor. It's another coat of many colors. It was a special gift from Jacob to his favorite son, Joseph. But in chapter 49, Jacob blesses all 12 of his sons. He's in the spirit now, peering into the future, prophesying over each son. Some of his words here in chapter 49, though, are more curses than blessings. Jacob will dole out some blessings, but he'll also pass along a few tough pills to swallow. Notice verse 1. "And Jacob called his sons and said, 'Gather together that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days. Gather together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel, your father.'" Jacob is on his deathbed now, and all his sons have gathered around him. His bedroom is about to become a courtroom. He begins with the oldest, Reuben. "You are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, you shall not excel." Remember, water always flows to the lowest point, and this was Reuben's spiritual history. Rather than rise up spiritually, Reuben always gravitated to the lowest point morally. "Because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it. He went up to my couch." Jacob mentions an example here of Reuben's spiritual character. In Genesis 35, verse 22, we're told that Reuben had committed incest with one of Jacob's concubines. It was a sin that cost him dearly. He forfeited his rights as the firstborn. He will not excel. Reuben ends up not even entering the promised land. They settled, his tribe settled for a spot east of the Jordan River, where the first tribe, and they were ended up becoming the first tribe scattered by the Assyrians years later.
From the creation of all we see and know to the great flood that destroyed everyone but Noah and his family, the book of Genesis is foundational to our faith. As Pastor Sandy teaches through Genesis, we'll learn how each story applies to us and how each story points to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Join us each day as we journey through the first book of the Bible, Genesis. This has been another edition of Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. He's the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, we're sure that today's message in Genesis has blessed and encouraged you in your walk with Jesus Christ. Maybe you'd like to review this message again, or perhaps a family member or friend has come to mind today. Log on to sandyadams.org and click on the radio program option in the main menu. There you'll find today's message. All you need to do is remember today's date and visit sandyadams.org. Or you can give us a call right here at the church. Our phone number is 770-736-2828. Someone is standing by to talk with you. Again, just mention today's date and we'll send you the full-length CD. In the next edition, Pastor Sandy will continue teaching verse by verse through the book of Genesis. On behalf of Pastor Sandy and the entire production team, we want to say thank you for tuning in and may God bless you.